Welcome back to My Seminary Life. I'm your host, Brandon Knight, and today I'm going to talk about a book that I have talked frequently about here on the show. It comes up every once in a while, Autopsy of a Deceased Church by Tom Rainer. And yes, if you've been listening to the show for a while now, you know I do talk about that book often. And that this episode is quite the shift from what was being covered here on the show last week. Last week was the Schools Out special. This is an annual special I have here on the show. Just kind of a casual, for fun episode that brings us, you know, reminds us of the joys of freedom, of summer vacation, a taste of the good life, and with it being called Schools Out, it made sense to me to at some point do an episode on the Alice Cooper song Schools Out. So that was last week on the show, and I'm very much aware of just how sharply of a turn we are making here this week, talking about Autopsy of a Deceased Church. But you know what? It's my show, and you're listening to it, so apparently you like the mental whiplash I like putting you all through here on My Seminary Life. So I guess first, when it comes to this book review, been a while since I've done a pure book review here on the show, back-to-back reviews in general, but it's been a while since I've done a book review. So when it comes to Autopsy of a Deceased Church, let me start with how I first came across this book. The year is 2015, and I have just finished up my pastoral internship, at the Grace Baptist Church in Gary, Indiana. And while I was there, it was never explicitly stated that this was his plan. But basically, while I was there, the pastor of the church resigned, or attempted to resign. I believe the plan was, without telling anybody, he got me in place there so that way he could resign and they would just give the church to me. I really think that is what, looking back now, what he was trying to do. The deacons, however, did not accept his resignation. Instead, they gave him a month-long sabbatical and extended my internship by an entire month. And while I was, so that way he could take a break, I could be a part of keeping the church functioning on Sunday mornings, day by day in the office, all that good stuff. And while the pastor was on sabbatical, part of the requests from the deacons was that they would, him and his family would get away, go take a week, a weekend, whatever, away, and to read a book. Now, he returned one Sunday, and I was going out of town. Basically, his return Sunday, the previous Sunday was my last day there, and I was going to be out of town that next weekend. So I was going on my own sabbatical after my grueling, if you can't sense the sarcasm there, my grueling internship of a whole 4 months. It was like late May through the end of September or something like that. I was going to go on vacation because I was just so, anyway, making fun of myself. So the end of the story for him is he returned, didn't get anything out of the book or the sabbatical, and three months later, retired from pastoral duty and went into a new form of ministry. And he was able to go into a new form of ministry because the deacons accepted his retirement. And that is actually also partially how my preaching ministry then got started, because I became the routine pulpit supply for that church for 5 years. I think it was about 5 years. Some periods of time, it was multiple Sundays a month. Other times, it may have been just a few times a year, but that was the birth of my preaching ministry began there. The book that the pastor was asked to read, though, was Autopsy of a Deceased Church by Tom Rainer, Who knew? And as I said, he got nothing out of the book. Why, or more, maybe the right question is, how do I know that? Well, about a month after he returned back to the church, and by this point, I am in seminary for the first time trying to get through seminary, and I just started my job in retail that you all heard the tail end about here during the existence of this show. So right around a month later after his return, so this is like sometime in October now, he reached out and wanted to just grab a cup of coffee. And we went up to a restaurant, got coffee and like a slice of cake or something, you know, and just had an just spent the afternoon together catching up a little bit since I had just started all these new things. He wanted to know what was going on. And then we talked a little bit about the sabbatical, and he found the book to be very unhelpful. He told me that the deacon's purpose in assigning him this book to read was to make a game plan as to how to grow the church from reading that book. Not numerically grow the church, although that probably would have been a part of it, but to make proactive changes within the church that would benefit the community, benefit the church itself, all those kinds of things. In hindsight, honestly, probably not the right book to assign. Now, he took a very pessimistic approach to this book and said, our church is dead. There's nothing that this book can help us with. The church is dead. That was his whole review of the book. And like I said, I don't think that was the right book to assign in this situation, looking back now, having read it now a couple times. It's not necessarily the right book to read for the what was going on with him at that time. There's plenty of other great books and resources out there for a pastor who is burnt out, who is discouraged, who is experiencing tension with his deacons, which was a real issue that was going on and would not be addressed. The church was unhealthy. I've probably used the word toxic before in the past. The church was unhealthy. And in the end, the church did actually do the right thing 5 years later after exhausting every other possibility. But they eventually did the right thing and they gave themselves over to a new church plant. That is, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit with this book, but that is one of the recommended things to do if you are a dying or dead church, is to basically die with dignity, die with grace, and to prepare the finances, the building, and the people to be handed over to a new young ministry or church plant. So although the circumstances surrounding how I was introduced to this book wasn't great, and it may not have been actually the most ideal resource to read during the time period he was in, this was my introduction, and eventually I did get around to reading it, and it was transformational in how I did my pulpit supply, preaching residency, traveling pastor, ministry thing. I don't know. That's like all the things that people have called it over the past 10 years or, yeah, it's been 10 years, a little over 10 years, more like 11 now, that people have called it over the past 11 years now. It's all the different terms that's gone by. It's probably, if I was to ever sit down and make a class on the thing that I do, this would be required reading. This would definitely be like one of the central books that I would have students read. I don't know if that is something that is going to happen. There was the possibility of me doing a class on church health at one point this year. I don't know if that offer is still on the table, but that is part of the reason why I very recently reread the book, took extensive notes, kind of threw in some of my own thoughts, and why I'm talking about it here today, because it is fresher on my mind now. But part of the reason why, for me, this kind of a book was so helpful and so transformational in how I do my pulpit supply ministry is that it really gives you very succinct points of health, of church health. And not so much for these instances with this ministry where I'm in a church situation for like once or twice and then I never hear from them again, but these, the few churches that I've had where I have served in longer runs, this has helped me to gauge where the church is at alongside pairing that with conversations with members of the church, deacons and elders, the pastor if they do have one, and just kind of gauging where a church is at in order then to preach messages that are relevant to the congregation. I have predominantly, I don't want to say never, but I have predominantly brought messages to churches that I believe are relevant to that congregation. I just don't have five sermons that I recycle and they're all on John 3:16 and Ephesians 2:8 and 9, and you know, they're not just like basic cuts of sermons. I purposely write sermons for a specific context, for a specific group, and obviously consistency with that group helps. It helps me write these sermons, having conversations, making connections with people in the church. That helps me to know what's going on. And this book also provides a little bit of common insight, common issues that do come up in sick, dying, and dead churches. The book hits that My Seminary Life sweet spot that I've talked about frequently here on the show. Short, sweet, to the point, and packed with information. It is, I know I've said on the show before, it looks like a coffee table book, especially like I have the hardback version. So like it looks like something that could sit on an end table and it's just there. Even the title itself, Autopsy of a Deceased Church, kind of sounds like a, like, you know, mystery novel kind of thing that you could have just like sitting next to your armchair. But the book is a collection of data and stories from Tom Rainer's ministry of working with thousands of churches and just experiencing so many dead, dying, sick churches, and being able to take all of that experience, that data, those stories, and putting it together to say, these are the common themes. These are the common things that churches do. These are the common things that churches don't do. These are the common things that mentalities, lack of habits, things like that, that churches in these situations typically have. And at the end of the book, he offers 12 things to do if you find yourself in one of these categories. If the church is just kind of not feeling well, here's 4 things to do to try and get you back on track. If the church is like very sick, here's some things you can do. But just so you know, if a church is very sick, the probability of turning things around drastically goes down. And if the church is dead, Rainer's approach to if a church is dead is not resurrection. It is not. It is die with dignity. It is time to hand the reins over to someone else to run this operation. Now, as for the contents of the book itself, I don't really want to go page by page through all of it, but just to give you some highlights, because I really think that if you are in some form of ministry where you are working in a church environment, or even if you are just a person if you're a living person, if you are a active member of your church, maybe you don't have any kind of, you know, on staff roles, or you're a volunteer with VBS or whatever the case may be. If you are a person who just cares about your church, I really think everyone should and definitely can read this book. This book is not super deep theologically speaking. Like, it's very accessible, very readable. So I don't want to like go over every single drop of this page, because I want to make sure people check it out. You know, I'm not getting paid for any of this. This is just me talking about a resource that has been very helpful for me. This episode is actually going to be put into the Ministry Insights playlist, which is all of the episodes I've done here on My Seminary Life that are related to vocational church ministry work and all that kind of stuff, which was a lot of what my seminary education was. So, you know, if this intrigues you and you need or want more of that kind of stuff, it is going to be part of that playlist. But one of the biggest things in this book is the fact that the church, a really good gauge of a church's health is how involved in the community and how much like the community they look like. Meaning that do people in the community, if you surveyed the community, does the community even know your church exists or that it's still open? Or talking about looking like the community, has the demographics of the community changed over the years, and is that reflected in the church? Is your church population mostly people from the community? Are people commuting in, or are people in the community finding other churches that give them a proper voice? For example, if you're in a community that is very urban, but the church is very not urban, then there's something afoot there that needs to be addressed. This always reminds me of the story that Tim Keller used to tell of when Redeemer Church started to grow rapidly in the New York in New York. New York? Yeah, New York. I don't know why I forgot for a second. In New York, obviously all the church planting gurus and church growth gurus started investigating to see what the secret sauce is. And one thing they took from it, from all of their, you know, observances, is that they had a jazz service. And so next thing you know, everybody was supposed to start offering jazz as a worship service experience. And Tim Keller was like, no, we have a jazz-based service, musical service, because we have a thriving jazz community in this area. Why would you go to rural South Dakota, rural Kansas, and start a jazz worship service? Ain't nobody going to show up to that. Do a country one, or, you know, whatever. You know, like, this is an example of how sometimes when we see church growth happen in one specific area and we try to push that upon, like, this is good habits for church growth. Instead, what we are actually seeing is a church that is tabernacling in their community. They look like their community. They, in this case, sound like their community. And that's good. And that's a gauge for your church when it comes to health. Does the church look like the community? The church serving in the community? Does the community even know the church is still around? There are some of those, like, you can almost call it like brick and mortar, kind of like, you know, obviously a church should be doing this, but let's just make these things clear. Is there time of prayer? And more importantly, is that prayer intentional, or is it just a habit that you are going through? Another example would be gospel, kind of going back to being in the community. Are you serving the community? Is the gospel being proclaimed in the community? Or do people have to literally just enter the walls of your church to hear the gospel and to be cared for? baptisms. When was the last time your church did a baptism? Or one thing that I have come to realize in my own ministry experience, when was the last time your church did communion? Because it seems like that is another thing that just kind of slides off when there is no, when a church begins to grow unhealthy, when it starts to become toxic. There's also some of those things that you would maybe anticipate, especially if you have been in a sick, dying, dead church environment. For example, idolizing the past. Oh, this kind of comes up often throughout the book and is also something that has been covered here on the show before. Just the intoxication of nostalgia, right? Like, we are going to do things because that is the way that we have always done them. We're going to bicker about this room over here because even though it's empty now and we could use it for this ministry over here, we're not going to because this room is supposed to be for this purpose. And even though we haven't used that ministry in decades, that's what that room is for. And so we're going to fight about it. So all of those kind of like nostalgia-driven infighting in the congregation, the disinterest in the congregation to be involved, to serve in any way, shape, or form, or even to be offering an appropriate way for a congregation to get involved. I've heard it said before. I don't know if this is an actual fact, or if this is just one of those cliche things we pass around, but I have heard it said before that 90% of the ministry in church is done by 10% of the people. And if your church is getting even less involvement from the congregation, again, that is a big red flag. But with that red flag, I want to address something that is glaringly missing from this book. When I first read it years ago, you know, I thought every little bit of this book was great and wonderful, no notes, it's perfect. Having read it now several years later, done several years worth of ministry, did seminary, and having listened to a very specific podcast, there is one very specific thing that never gets brought up in this book by way of measuring church health, and that is toxic leadership. Honestly, if you read this book, and this stood out like a sore thumb this most recent time I read it, if you read this book, it is actually very easy to walk away thinking that all of the problems in a church is the congregation's fault and not the pastor. There is a very appropriate chapter in this book on pastoral burnout. There is one chapter and how, again, this like measuring of a church's health can be seen also in the how quickly turnover becomes with pastors. If you are, you know, if at one point in time your pastors at this church lasted 10, 15, 20 years, and now it's been three pastors in 5 years, that's a red flag. But never once is it ever addressed that there are times where churches get sick or die because of toxic leadership. It actually always focuses on how the congregation is dropping the ball. And you may be thinking, well, even if the congregation is dropping the ball, that's also on the leadership. Well, here's the thing, is that a lot of Tom Rainer's examples in the book are examples of when the pastor was working very hard to shepherd the congregation away from whatever the issue was and eventually would just get burnt out and give up or move on. So even at that, Rainer, I don't know if that's intentional, unintentional, whatever the case may be, he always comes back to basically protecting the pastor and the people in leadership positions in this book, where in reality, that isn't necessarily always the case. The church I opened this whole episode with, there were issues going on within the leadership that were never addressed, and that killed the church. There was a lot of things that killed the church. Rarely, I would say, when it comes to the death of a church, do you actually have like a, this person right here is the Jeffrey Dahmer who murdered everybody. Instead, you have more like Murder on the Orient Express, where it's everybody. Everybody's hands are dirty here. And that is why I want to make sure that this is present in this review of this book, that you also are going to have to outsource some learning, some experience in seeing examples of when the leadership was the primary cause of a church's demise. And obviously, if you can't see this one coming a mile away, that's where a podcast like The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill Church is going to be really helpful. Personally, I think the measure of a church's health should be from the pulpit to the pew, not the pew to the pulpit, meaning that the leadership of the church are the front line of how the church's health should be gauged, especially moving beyond this time right now where it seems like frequently we are finding out about this pastor, this ministry, this whatever, of just toxic, abusive leadership, this double standard, this hypocrisy that's going on behind closed doors, and how these things do kill a church even before it gets started. Because there may be some instances where people become bad people later on, but there are also times where people are put into positions of power who never should be put in there in the first place because they are unhealthy and not qualified to be in that position. If you would like some more of my thoughts on The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill Church, or some thoughts on discerning your calling into ministry, this year I have done videos on both of those on the Studio 219 YouTube channel, which I encourage you to check out. The video on the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill that came out a couple months ago, but discerning your calling video, that's pretty recent, so you can definitely easily find that on the Studio 219 YouTube channel. Link for that in the description of this episode. So in all, I would still definitely say, if you are particularly in a place of leadership within a church, but honestly, if you are just somebody who cares about the health of your church, this is a must read. This is a must have on your physical or digital bookshelf, or borrow it from your local library, because libraries need your support too, folks. So with all of that in mind, definitely check this book out. It is not perfect. Hopefully you got that from that last little bit. There is definitely the lack of calling out accountability for people in leadership that are toxic. But when it comes to the autopsy of a deceased church, definitely get your hands on it. Again, it would be an expected read, a mandatory read, if I was making a class on this wacky job thing that I do that has multiple titles attached to it. Well, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for dropping in to this edition of My Seminary Life. If you haven't already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend, maybe somebody who is in ministry who has yet to read this book and just needs to know the value of it. And I already plugged the YouTube channel, but I haven't plugged the Anazal Ministries podcast network yet, so make sure you check out all the other great shows here on the network, including Friday Night Frights, The Bible After Hours, and my other show, Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I review Kung Fu movies and other forms of martial art media. Had a really good episode recently on the movie Big George Foreman to honor the passing of the former world heavyweight champion who passed away back in March. And producer Cooper just had a pirate ship boat emergency, and I completely forgot what I was talking about. I think I was telling you to go listen to Kung Fu Pizza Party. I reviewed the movie Big George Foreman, who passed away back in March. So if that's all redundant, sorry. When pirate ship emergencies come up, you have to deal with them immediately. That is the focal point of everything that needs to happen. But that's it again for this episode. Got some older series that we haven't touched on for the past few months coming up here in the next few weeks to get us through the summer. But until then, this is Brandon signing off, reminding you as always that theology is for everyone. So keep on studying.